Coming up on today's program.
This radio station is standing on the shoulders of the people who came before us. So I want to thank the thousands and thousands of people and thousands of volunteer hours and the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into this place. And there's so many people to thank right now.
WYSO finds a new home. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WYSO. In today's program, we've got Bulletin Board Diaries, One Small Step, and Translucent. Up first, you'll hear it mentioned that this has been a monumental week for WYSO Public Radio. We're now broadcasting from our new home in the historic Union Schoolhouse in Yellow Springs. With staff, volunteers, and a host of engineers on hand, WYSO's broadcast signal was transferred following its noon newscast on Wednesday. Check out this montage of the switchover that includes a few moments of WYSO's original broadcast in 1958 from the campus of Antioch College and Evan Miller's conversation with WYSO General Manager Luke Dennis in our new home. Bring on the montage.
Modern Nature taking us out of this first hour today from their latest out last year, The Heat Warps. This is Radio. Q Lazarus before that on Goodbye Horses. And those are the last two songs I'll play for you at the Kettering Building here on the campus of Antioch College. I'll lay out for you what happens next. I will wrap up this hour and pass it over to NPR News Headlines as usual. I will then get in my car outside the door here at the building, the Kettering Building, dash over to the Union Schoolhouse, and after Mike Fraser's noontime midday newscast signals me to hand over the reins, we will begin broadcasting from the Union Schoolhouse on the other side of the village of Yellow Springs over on Dayton Street. An exciting moment in WYSO history is on the way to you right now. So, for the final time for me, at least, and Mike Fraser will be the last, broadcasting from the campus of Antioch College, this is 91.3 WYSO Yellow Springs and WYSO HD2, Novaphonic.fm. Listener-powered music exploration for Southwest Ohio. I'm your host for Midday Music, Evan Miller. The next time you hear me, I'll be in a new place. It probably won't sound any different, hopefully, but I promise we'll be in a brand new location here in less than 10 minutes, perhaps. We'll guide you through it as we make this big handoff. More music after the news. It's 12:01.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh.
And that's your newscast here on 91.3 WYSO. Since 1958, WYSO has broadcast from the campus of Antioch College. Our first home was on the second floor of the Student Union. Then in 1994, we relocated to the basement of the Sontag Fells Building. In 2012, we moved across the street to our current home in the former Kettering Laboratory Building. This building has been the backdrop of 14 years of growth and evolution, including WYSO's transition to an independent, community-owned public radio station. Today, thanks to the support of our many generous members, we take our next steps into the future in our new home, the Union Schoolhouse. In just a moment, we'll cease broadcasting from the Kettering Building, and the next sounds you will hear will come from our new studio in the Union Schoolhouse. And you might hear a brief moment of silence as we make the switch.
Good evening. At this time, Antioch College begins its first official transmission on FM. This is station WYSO, owned and operated by Antioch College, Yellow Springs, Ohio, with studios and transmitter on the campus of Antioch College, operating on a frequency of 91.5 megacycles, by authority of the Federal Communications Commission. For its first program, the Antioch Broadcasting System will bring you the official opening and formal dedication of its facilities in the Antioch Union.
Good evening.
And today, on this Wednesday, March the 18th, at 12:12 p.m., broadcasting from the Union Schoolhouse in Yellow Springs, this is 91.3 WYSO and WYSO HD2, Novaphonic.fm. Midday Music continues. I'm your host, Evan Miller. Happy to be with you here from our brand new studios in the Union Schoolhouse. We did it. We're here, everybody. Fantastic. I'll talk to WYSO General Manager Luke Dennis here shortly, but I had to give some thought about what the first song I would play in this building is, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I thought I should play this one, so here it is. You might know it. It's called Finally by C.C. Penniston, because finally we have arrived here at the Union Schoolhouse. It's Midday Music. Thanks for listening. C.C. Penniston back there with Finally. Finally, indeed, we are at our brand new home of the Union Schoolhouse here in Yellow Springs. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO and WYSO HD2, Novaphonic.fm, listener-powered music exploration for Southwest Ohio. I'm your host, Evan Miller. So happy to be with you here in our brand new home. WYSO General Manager Luke Dennis here for the occasion. Hello.
Evan, I'm feeling very emotional. Nice job getting over here so quickly.
Thank you.
We were all picturing you hauling it over here in your car. thank you for letting me come on your show for a minute.
Of course.
This is a huge moment for WYSO. And,
it's been a long, long road to get here.
Oh, my gosh. And this radio station always is standing on the shoulders of the people who came before us. So I want to thank the thousands and thousands of people and thousands of volunteer hours and the blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into this place. And there's so many people to thank right now. Evan and I are standing I think it's the most beautiful radio station in America right now and in the most state-of-the-art. And there's so many people to thank for that. The donors who made it possible, the incredible team who's been on site for weeks and months doing installation and testing and wiring. Our chief engineer is standing about 4 feet away from me, and this is his baby. I really want to thank Jim Stitt of JM Stitt and Associates, who's been a mentor for me and a guide through this very gnarly process. We had no idea it would take this long, right? I mean,
yeah, we've talked roughly about timelines on the air, I guess, maybe kind of on and off for, it's always been, it's coming. We're going to get there.
I just can't believe that we're finally here. Yeah. So it's, Juliet, our music director, Juliet, let me know that yesterday it was the 4-year anniversary of the first time the staff came over to this building for a tour.
Oh, man, was it really?
Yeah, so we started talking about, this will go here and floor plans.
Yeah.
And that was initially we thought we would stack the station across the three floors of the original 1872 structure. But then, of course, you and I are standing in this gorgeous addition that was built where all of the broadcast equipment is in the addition. And then the old part of this building is full of color and light and administrative offices. So I don't have a whole lot to say. I just want to thank you know who you are. I got to thank our staff, our hardworking staff. It's stressful to move a building. There's a lot of volatility, and we are a 24/7, 365 operation. So nice job to everyone on the staff. Thanks again to Jim Stitt. And I've got to thank Dave Chappelle, because we wouldn't be in this facility if it weren't for him. There was a struggle to find a new home for WYSO once we made the decision to become independent from Antioch College. And we had just raised a lot of money to purchase our license. And Dave stepped in with an offer to renovate this gorgeous old building. And 4 years later, we're standing in it, and he's our new landlord, so I want to thank him as well. So, and just everybody, I want you to know, this is an inflection point for public radio. This is an inflection point for WYSO. Independent journalism and music discovery have always been important, but right now, it's the independent folks who are able to stand up and continue to do the right thing and speak truth to power and play music that other people don't play because it's not part of their commercial algorithm.
Yeah, so exactly.
This is a great time for our radio station, and we're here to serve this community. We wouldn't be here without this amazing community. So just keep paying attention to what we're doing. In April, there are going to be some big parties, and we want to see you on the front lawn. We want to see you for tours in the building, food trucks and music. So lots to come. But thank you, Evan, for letting me sit in for a quick moment on your show.
Absolutely. I think it's a testament to, you know, with the, you know, the state of public media and public radio in particular right now. I think it's a real testament to community support from all corners that we thrive, we bloom, we're here in this brand new space with support from our listeners.
And we're standing up straight.
Yes.
And have a lot of optimism about our bright future together.
Thank you, Luke. We'll continue with more music here in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening to Midday Music today on this monumental day in WYSO history. More on the way. We'll be right back.
And again, thanks to everyone who made this move to WYSO's new home possible. I'm Jerry Kenney. Stay with us. We've got lots more coming your way. WYSO's bulletin board diaries highlights small local businesses and their owners. Today, we meet a Jamestown auctioneer whose business card we found on the bulletin board inside Dots Market in Bellbrook. For most people, the sound of an auction is unmistakable. The crowds of people milling around long rows of tables stacked with items of all kinds, from books to furniture to children's toys and gardening tools. Old kitchen gadgets that, depending on your age, you might or might not know what they're used for. Endless possibilities. And then there's an introduction of the items up for grabs and the auctioneer's banter.
That's a Pee-wee soda bottle. It's marked Pee-wee, little soda bottle. And the marbles that are in it, this is a little dairy. Both those bottles are marbles.
You're buying both the marbles. All right, don't lose your marbles. Get 10 and go.
Then the opening bids start. And hopefully the following onslaught of bids that drive up the price of the item as high as they can go until finally.
Sold 17 and a half, straight back to number 8.
This process happens over and over until as many items as possible are sold. Auctions take a lot of planning and a crew that knows what they're doing. An integral part of the crew on this day is auctioneer Darren Johnson.
Today we're selling for a lady. Her and her husband are downsizing. They have been collectors and dealers for many, many years. One of the more fun auctions to put together because we had a lot of totes that we moved stuff in, and every tote you opened had a different treasure.
Johnson says becoming an auctioneer was his childhood dream, but life led him down another path first.
While I was at Wilmington College, I started at the local radio station in Wilmington, became their full-time farm director, and I found a gentleman in Indiana by the name of Gary Truitt who ran a network of stations, and we had about 80 radio stations across the state of Indiana that we provided all the news, markets and weather for, farm news, markets and weather. And then I had the opportunity to come back to Ohio to go to a radio station out of Columbus whose signal reached 80 of the 88 counties. That was WRFD. And that went well.
So well that Johnson spent about 25 years in radio. Then a format change at WRFD put him back on the path to becoming an auctioneer. Today, he works for Harvey Plus, a real estate brokerage based in Springfield. Johnson says the region has a lot of good auctioneers, and he humbly counts himself among them.
Reading people. You know, Are they really done, or are they just thinking about it? Or are they really out? They're not going to bid again. Those types of things. You know, I would encourage anyone that is thinking about an auction to contact two auctioneers. See who you're more comfortable with. The dollars and cents at the end of the day probably aren't going to make a hill of beans difference. It's more about a comfort level. Who do you really connect with and trust to handle your merchandise? Auctioneers are funny people, I will admit, and we all have a saying, the best auction is the one I didn't take, because the auctioneer has to be comfortable with the seller as well. And if the seller has unreasonable expectations, maybe that's a reason not to get in a business relationship. And it is a business relationship, but it's also a personal relationship.
If there's a downside to the auctioneering world, Johnson says it's one that could play out down the road.
If you look at the crowd around us today, there's not a lot of young people. There's not a lot of young people. And my kids, when they moved out of the house, their pots and pans, their silverware, most of their furniture came from an auction. They learned to appreciate. A lot of kids today want to start where mom and dad are, not where mom and dad started. And they would rather go to IKEA and pay three times the value for press board than they would to go over here and pay a couple $100 for this beautiful bed we have sitting over here against the wall that's a priceless antique built solid that will outlive them.
For now, auctions are a year-round business for Johnson and his colleagues, so he'll continue to live out his childhood dream, and as he says,
if they've got something to sell, I'll be there.
One time on the cars right there to my right, your left, get five and go. Five, 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 seven and a half. I'm at five, seven and a half, half, half.
You can find more episodes of Bulletin Board Diaries on our website at wyso.org. Well, included in this great week for WYSO, reporter Adriana Martinez-Smiley was heard by NPR listeners with their report about how, for decades, firefighters used a foam that contained PFAS, or forever chemicals, that can cause cancer and other illnesses. But now, a PFAS annihilator can destroy the toxic chemical in the foam. Here's that report.
Firefighters don't always rely on water to battle fires. For decades, they've also used a firefighting foam called AFFF to put out oil and gas fires. The problem is that foam has high concentrations of PFAS, commonly called forever chemicals. PFAS come with health risks if humans are exposed. Some states have placed restrictions on using the foam. In Ohio, the state is working to destroy the foam by using a pioneering technology. Adriana Martinez-Smiley from member station WYSO reports.
For 20 years, Lieutenant Jason Brockmeyer has worked at Franklin Township Fire Department in Ohio. He says the crew was often called to fight highly dangerous flammable liquid fires.
We were considered the experts.
That's because the township fire department had 1,000 gallons of AFFF on hand, given to them by nearby fuel storage facilities.
So AFFF was always kept in the truck.
The truck is called a foam response unit vehicle. That all changed in 2024 when Ohio started its AFFF take-back program. It's part of the state's larger effort to mitigate the spread of PFAS, since research links those chemicals to cancer and other health problems. Brockmeyer says when Ohio started the program, fire departments throughout the state jumped at the opportunity to hand over their firefighting foam.
And we took it out to the state fire marshal's office. They took all that product back.
The Ohio EPA director, John Logue, says their agency administers the AFFF take-back program. He says the foam was in widespread use before anyone knew how dangerous it was.
Part of it was getting our arms around is how much is out there across Ohio? How much is in storage? Where is it? What kind do they have?
Logue says Ohio collected nearly 14,000 gallons of AFFF in the spring of 2024 and sent it to a company that's found a way to destroy PFAS in the foam. Revive Environmental is a spinoff company of the scientific research nonprofit Battelle, which has a contract with the state of Ohio to carry out the take-back program. Revive CEO David Throeba says the company uses a device it calls the PFAS Annihilator. He says it's one of the first technologies known to transform the foam into water with undetectable levels of PFAS. In a tour of the company's plant in Ohio, Throeba stands next to an annihilator.
So what you're hearing right now is the sound of pumps and equipment feeding different chemicals in the system.
The process uses pressure and heat to break the chemical bonds that make PFAS so strong. Throeba holds up a small container of what comes out.
This looks like clean water because that's exactly what it is. Clean water that can be processed through an existing sewer system for wastewater treatment, PFAS-free.
Samples from every processed batch are sent to a third-party testing facility to ensure it meets the requirements of the City of Columbus's wastewater permit and federal limits on PFAS before it's sent down the drain.
Rainwater, stormwater, sink water from your house, we send it down there because it's just as safe to use now from a PFAS standpoint.
Now the Ohio EPA is trying to find funds to pay to destroy thousands more gallons of foam still registered in the state. At least three other states, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and New Jersey, have instituted AFFF take-back programs as well to keep a dangerous substance out of the environment. For NPR News, this is Adriana Martinez-Smiley in Dayton, Ohio.
And again, you can find more of Adriana's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. On this week's episode of One Small Step, two moms reflect on how they were raised and how that shaped the way they chose to raise their own kids. Susie Nandersee of Dayton and Michelle O'Connor of Miamisburg met at the Huber Heights branch of the Dayton Metro Library. Susie talks about breaking a cycle of fear in her household, while Michelle shares how growing up with very little inspired her to teach her child generosity. Their stories come together around the idea that parenting isn't about getting everything perfect. It's about doing your best to pass along something better.
You parent differently than how your parents parented you.
Ooh, yes. My father grew up being physically punished for every small infraction.
Mm-hmm.
And he carried that forward to his parenting because he didn't know any different.
Mm.
My mom did not subscribe to that exact same level, but still there was physical punishment in the absence of knowing how to correct behavior.
Mm.
I think that as a younger parent, I have an incredible benefit of social media and Google. So when I am unsure of how to handle a difficult situation with my kids, I have a worldwide network of young parents like myself who are potentially trying to change their parenting style from how they were parented. And I can rely on those. And information is so easily attainable, and I can really find what works for my children specifically. And I've seen the benefits from that, and I feel pretty confident that they're pretty good humans. I've never felt the need to physically correct my kids, but they still get the mom look from across the room, and they correct behavior. But there's no fear in my house. And I think that is the biggest difference growing up. There was a lot of fear.
Yeah.
My dad's truck would come home from work and I would hear his truck tires on the gravel driveway. And my brother and I would run to our rooms and hide. And my kids run to the door, usually with schoolwork that they've done that they're really proud of, or a box full of play makeup. Mom, can I do your makeup? Can I do your makeup? Or wanting to talk about a book that they're reading. But the difference in our parenting has resulted a difference in the feeling in our home. And I am very, very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. You should be.
Thanks.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
So
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, I was raised by my mom, and it was just she and I because my brother and sister left home and they were young. We didn't have a lot growing up when I was growing up, and just living in that situation and seeing what others had, I had what I needed, but I guess I just want to make sure that, like, I think people should look out for each other, and not everybody has the same opportunities. And those who have, in my opinion, I think could probably do okay if they maybe gave a little more. So my son saw me and what I would do. And I wasn't always able to volunteer, but I would donate and to different, you know, charities and make sure he knew I was donating. Yeah. Not so much be like, oh, look at me and look what I'm doing, but this is important. These people don't have, or we're donating to this, you know, to take care of these animals because they need something too. And now he's a teacher. And so he's giving back every day. And he gives of his time, and I don't know what he gives financially, if anything, but definitely his time, and that's important.
Yeah, so. Sounds like you accomplished your goal.
I did what I could.
That's all we can do as parents.
Exactly. Oh.
That was Michelle O'Connor and Susie Nandersi. One Small Step is produced by the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. The series is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and presented by the Charles F. Kettering Foundation. The center also issued this week their latest edition of Translucent. Creator and host Lee Wade tells the story of a local family during a deeply personal time. While the last episode of Translucent focused on their son coming out as transgender, this one centers on the parents.
Hi, I'm Lee Wade, and you're listening to Translucent, a series that amplifies trans voices, humanizes our community, and creates space for the real everyday conversations that don't make headlines. In the last episode, we met Eddie Clark, a young trans man. In this episode, we hear from his parents, Eric and Jackie Clark, as they reflect on raising a trans son and the journey their family has taken together.
We had kind of gotten some hints that maybe Eddie at the time might have been lesbian, so that was fine with us. So then from there, things just kind of progressed. And as Eddie was exploring, I think, more and more who he was, so we just had to keep an eye on that and make sure that we had good therapists who could help Eddie with that journey. And we were very lucky that we did find some really good people to help us through that. But then, of course, COVID came along and things got very complicated.
Yeah, the friendships were tricky because then they weren't seeing their friends in school. And then they all went back to school in sixth grade. And suddenly the dynamics had changed and the friendships had changed. And sixth grade was really, really rough. And then finally the summer and into seventh grade came out as a boy and said, I want to go by this name. And so then it was like, oh, okay. So that's what's been going on.
But what started to creep in there was all the body dysmorphias and all of that. So there was always that, how lightly do we tread on this versus the how fast do we go into this? Because clearly what Eddie needed was to build this new identity and find some way to push the old person out. And it really was, to me, just a different type of a puberty event when you have what you might call just a quote-unquote normal child, they go through an enormous change in their life. And when someone is transitioning, it's almost like for them, they have to do yet a second puberty because they have to change themselves completely one more time. Yeah. And that can be really, really difficult.
Well, especially if you don't have the words or know that's what's happening. And even as parents, I mean, again, at first it was, okay, you want some different clothes. I get it. We all go through that. Oh, wait, you're really unhappy. Oh, now you're having problems at school, which he never had problems at school. So watching all that happen in sixth grade, we knew it was way more than just coming out of COVID or just being depressed or all the justs you can say. So it was I mean, it was just a light bulb, like, oh, okay, that's what's really happening, as well as social anxiety and frustrations and depression and being a teenager, all that fun stuff. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, like, I hope that families who are struggling with, you know, accepting their kids or, you know, accepting another loved one, they can just hear you all's story and think, okay, you know, I need to not think so much of this transition that this person is going through in their gender identity as something that's personally going to affect me, and think about ways that they can be a little bit more supportive and have a little bit more, you know, affirming spaces.
A lot of it has to be communication and talking about it and really figuring out, well, why do you want to do that? But not in an accusatory way, just being open to talking about it. I mean, I would hope that families can have those open conversations, but I know a lot of them can't. But just being able to listen to your kid and try to figure out what would make them happy.
And I think for parents, they should be willing to look at the really subtle signs of what is it that their kid is doing to be themselves instead of the kid that you are directing them to be.
Our trans youth need us to see them, not who we imagine them to be, but who they truly are. Thank you, Eddie, Eric, and Jackie, for being so open and honest with us. If you missed the conversation I had with Eddie last week, you can visit our webpage to hear more of his story. I'm Lee Wade, and thank you for listening to Translucent.
The Clark family are members of the Rainbow Alliance of Yellow Springs, or RAISE, a community group founded by local residents to support LGBTQ+ individuals, particularly youth, and their families in the Miami Valley. Translucent is supported by the Ruby Girls Foundation and Square One Salon and Spa. We'll catch up with Bird Note next week, and that puts a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. I'm Jerry Kenny. This program is available as a podcast that you can download and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. We'll bring you more highlights and conversations next weekend. Please join us then.